Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we're discussing the value of blood for the blood god. And the powers of magic and deception. Yep, double episode on two of the four chaos gods. Before we begin.
Well, are we going to actually promote ourselves?
Yeah, please like and subscribe to the podcast.
I feel like KR is here right now.
Exactly. For those of you who are, one thing we don't mention it enough, by the way, Brad does 40K coaching for any of you who are actually looking for someone to teach them how to be better at 40K, how to play 40K, both from a beginning level all the way up to kind of advanced level.
Better about the psychology and the betterment of the game also.
He's actually honestly a very, very good coach, Brad, as much as I want to shit talk him at this moment in time. And I really, really want to. I have to admit, Brad's actually an exceptional player who sees the game in ways that I don't. And it can be really eye-opening. I've played a game with Brad. We've made a small list change and my list has gotten light years better. So he's available for that. But also please join our Discord. There's great conversations there about lore, books. We also, you'll see us, we're in there constantly. It's a great place to give us feedback on episodes and request future episodes. That's actually what this one came from. We had a bunch of people who reached out to us and said, hey, you guys haven't really covered the Chaos Gods in depth, to which I went, oops, and now we're going to.
And we love feedback for, again, future episodes, but also anything that we can improve, anything that you think that you'd like to see us cover, all of the above.
Exactly. We're working on the audio.
Yeah, we're working on everything. One of the biggest things is we've been adding channels too in the Discord. That's one of the things I'm proud about. The Discord has grown so that we've added channels per your request.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see more Discord in our Discord.
Good job. Good job. All right. On that horrible, it wasn't even a pun. Topic at hand. So as we discussed last time, there are four chaos gods. And so we're going to do two-part episodes. And we decided to do it in a way where we're going to have it so the gods who hate each other the least. So today we're doing Khorne and Tzeentch. We're just going to do straight Khorne, and then we're going to jump into Tzeentch. So I'm not really going to bounce around a lot here. So if you're interested in one of them, fast forward halfway through or skip the back half, one of the two. So Khorne is the original. He's the first chaos god who was born out of the warp.
I think he's the most base of the gods. So he's almost always the most powerful of the gods in the 40K realm because in the dark future of 40K, there is only war. And that's why, because Khorne is the god of war, the god of murder, the god of blood, blood for the blood god. And one of the biggest things about Khorne is he's also the most base. So he came around first. So the most base of impulse is...
Yeah, and an important detail here is murder, violence, these will actually, depending on their cause, may actually feed Tzeentch, Slaanesh, and even Nurgle in some cases, but not as much as Khorne. That's one thing to understand about the Chaos Gods. No action is ever fully singular
Correct.
In its benefit, but either the emotion behind it, or in some cases, as you get into cultists and whatnot, the declaration behind it will then promote it more or less within different gods. So it's just the thing when we talk about, you'll say, if you're a warlord and you're like conquering someone else and then burning their libraries to the ground, where does Tzeentch or Slaanesh fall into this? Yeah. It's like, yeah, they can. Or a warlord could conquer a village and slaughter all the innocents. Khorne liked the first part, Slaanesh liked the second part. It's okay to have both. Yeah, so Khorne is the oldest, like Brad said. He's the most base. He was the first one to come to full consciousness in the warp. It was during the Dark Ages of mankind, as we covered last time.
Yeah, depending on what you say on that. I think it was by a long shot that Khorne came online.
Yeah.
Let me back that up. He's the first for humanity to come online, for sure.
Yeah, it's just the problem is it's really not clear. Like when they talk about,
I know, but like the thing is he's the easiest of. If you have three guys, if you have Nurgle. The four horsemen running, Nurgle. Yeah, you're right.
I'm just saying, like that's I disagree with this writing. I'm giving you guys the facts of what was written.
But the thing is,
to me, the most basic is plague and decay because it's literally how a mass extinction works. And we've had a bunch of them.
You're talking about sickness. I'm talking about getting a stick and hitting somebody.
Yeah. Guess which one happened first.
I think the stick.
No, it was very much so the bacteria. Know,
I saw you were sick, and I grabbed a stick, and I hit you.
Fair enough, yeah. Bacteria predates multicellular organisms by a wee bit of time, just so you know. But I digress. So corn, though, is the first one, and it is to Brad's point. The idea from the GW storyline is it's like, you know, a primitive hits another primitive with a rock, and corn is pleased. You know, the first civilization to come up not through education or sanitation, but by just conquering their foes, corn. He loves this
stuff. And the thing is you need for Slaanesh, for Tzeentch, you need civilization. You need a society to further their aims. You don't need any of that for corn.
That's true, because if you look at the way chimpanzees will go to war with each other, that's exactly something that corn would
corn to be right behind that.
This is awesome. But I'll make that chimpanzee into a gorilla.
You got a stick and a rock?
Yeah.
Corn.
Exactly. So that is, in theory, would make a lot of sense, except for the fact that GW wrote corn coming into existence during the Dark Ages. Anyway, so let's go into the powers of corn. So corn, and actually I think Nurgle, are the simplest of the gods to please. Maim, burn, kill. Corn wants.
Well, we have to go into corn because corn isn't just the god of victory. Corn is the god of battle, conquest, you know, everything. Corn doesn't care if you win. Corn just wants battle for battle.
Two gladiators fighting in a pit, corn loves it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even have a favorite. He may change sides
during the battle. 100%.
You're like, I like that move. Yeah. This is now my champion. Yeah, he actually is powering them each up.
He seemed a little bit more brave than you did. So now he's now my champion. But I was your champion. Not anymore.
And so every single drop of blood that spills I want to be careful here. In violence feeds corn. The reason to say in violence is corn does not like needless slaughter. A war band that runs through a village of women and children, kills them all. That's Slaanesh. Corn in theory might actually take away. Yeah, he would punish me. He would take away your treatments.
It's also sacrifices that don't have a purpose or don't have anything bravado behind them.
Yeah, there is emotion. Like blood for the blood god is not simply blood. It is. I was about to make Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom reference, but
yes, Kali Ma.
That's just, we're gonna lose everybody if we go that far back. But Korn's whole persona is about worthy battle, worthy slaughter, worthy blood. Even if you're cutting your own head off to please Korn, it is because I'm trying to raise a bloodthirster to create more war. He's not just self-mutilation for the sake of, I don't know, I'm
for goth. The sake of Slaanesh? There you go.
Because I'm goth. So as a result of this, Korn actually might be one of the most insidious.
By God accident. Influence.
Yeah, him and Nurgle. Again, I would compare them. It's Korn. It's not Nurgle. Because Nurgle, you have to reach out to Nurgle. So it is Korn. He's Korn, the most insidious.
Korn doesn't really require a reach out for him or you.
Yeah. You doing you makes Korn happy.
You trying to be a conquering lord. You trying to be better at battle. You trying to win the fight in the arena. Whatever it is.
Yeah, and that's, wow, that's a great point. Because I was thinking about that. The thing about Korn is, if I'm a warrior fighting, I may not even know Korn exists. Korn may not even be speaking into my ear. Or if he is, I don't hear it. But me doing things, Korn would actually still imbue me with power.
Because you just have to have the want to be better, the want to win, the want to conquer, the want to spill the most blood in this battle.
Exactly.
And all of those things.
That's all Korn cares about. So Korn is an interesting god because he's actually providing boons to people who don't want them from him or know he exists, and he does not care. He is just, and by the way, we're going to use the word he a lot. It's obviously these creatures have no gender. Just figured I'd point that out. It's duh. But
it's
anyway.
Duh.
But because you'll hear, I refer to Slaanesh as a she a lot, but some people, but it's actually technically a he. Who cares?
Whatever.
Exactly. Who cares? But anyway, so you can imagine some of these scenarios where Korn gets involved. under Hive Warband, you know, fighting through pit fighters who are like, you know, fighting for the invincibility, or hell, a squad of Catachan jungle fighters. They're fighting Tyranids with chainswords. Khorne sees this and imbues them with more power. The Tau? No. Khorne does not like ranged combat. He doesn't.
I'm just looking over the notes and I just saw all of the examples. And then, of course,
Tau.
John went, Tau? Nah, screw that.
No, because maybe the Kroot. He might like the Kroot because they at least will hit something. But Khorne does not like ranged combat. If you've ever played into any Khorne army, the shooting phase is really quick.
Real quick.
Yeah, it's like, and yeah, I'm going to charge now. So what about the Blood Angels? I mean, again.
Khorne worshippers.
The fun one, one of my favorite concepts would be a Grey Knight squad fighting Zinter Slaanesh.
I think the Aegis would protect you.
The Aegis might. But again, but Khorne wants to help them. And not because he wants to corrupt. The thing about Khorne is
He just wants to put down Slaanesh.
Yeah, he doesn't want to corrupt. Sure. A lot of the other gods want to corrupt. Khorne just wants more and more champions. This is why I like Khorne and Nurgle a lot, because their end game is less selfish and more just, I have a purpose in this universe, and I want more of that purpose.
In the thing, they're more base in the thing. It's easy on that. They're also more true.
No, the thing about Khorne is people make deals with Khorne, and they very much so do. But a lot of Khorne's influence is unknown. You just feel stronger. You feel more emboldened.
You just
and it's because
win.
You are. Yeah,
you. But you
are.
Also just win more sometimes, and you don't know why. Yeah,
you're just stronger.
People think you're just luckier because your blows land true more often. Yeah. Your opponent's blows sometimes fall awry. You know what I mean? They just slightly miss you. Remember that time that you didn't get you almost got a killing blow on you.
Yep, and you just ducked at the last second, or they hit a tree right next to your head. One thing that we want to talk about with each Chaos God is just, it's a really quick one, is numbers and colors. So Khorne's number is 8. These don't matter, except when you play the game.
Whoa.
They don't. It never comes up.
Slow your roll, John. Khorne, 8. Nurgle, 7. Slaanesh, 6. Zinch, 9. These are a real thing. Don't you see?
And they have no purpose.
They 100% have a purpose.
Really? Who are the 8th Legion?
Don't need the 8th Legion.
It was the Night Lords.
I just know that the number of Khorne is 8, and it is a sacred number. You do multiplicative stuff if you want to.
Okay, fine. In the Horus Heresy, the 8th Legion were the Night Lords. The 16th Legion were the Lunar Wolves.
You know, this is why heresy, John.
I don't understand why they do it. It's this random thing where like, oh, Khorne has a love of the number 8. Oh, so World Eaters were the 8th Legion? Well, no.
It doesn't matter the Legion. It matters the number of Khorne, my friend.
Yeah. And also, why does it have to be like...
Take your 8 Zerkers.
Why do they have to be 2 dice? Why can't I just have it on 1 dice? Like, it's 2. Also throwing that one out there. All right. Colors-wise, Khorne has 2 main colors. Blood red.
Brass.
And brass. And the reason it's brass is, for those who don't like brass, brass is a very old, like, metal from... If you know something like humanity... Before we really worked with gold and whatnot, you saw a lot of brass. And so brass and red, first of all, they look awesome together. It's a really great color scheme. But the brass is meant to be this like almost dirty metal. It's hard. You can kill with it.
Blood metal.
Yeah, it's a blood metal. You can do a lot more with it. So that's why it's brass.
And as demons come down with that, that is their armor.
Yeah.
Their armor is a brass.
It's brass. And you've also got like, they also see some yellows, some silvers. I'm much more partial to Nurgle and from painting scheme, but I will say people who paint Khorne armies well, they are beautiful.
They do pop.
Even though like the colors look, you see from a distance, like it's just red and brass. Yeah, but it looks good.
Yeah. Put some white highlights on that. Looks sweet.
As we talked about in the last cast, the warp at this stage has taken form. And so there's actually lands within the warp. Khorne has a region, Zinch has a region, Slaanesh and Nurgle.
For everybody, we said this last time, and I want to throw this out there for everybody that will yell at me if I don't. The warp is still a twisting, untamed landscape, but that landscape has a 4-part topography.
Yep.
For the most part.
There's a map. If you want to see what Khorne's map looks like, Did you see Lord of the Rings? Because GW didn't even try on this one.
Yeah, it's Mordor.
It is pure Mordor.
It's not even close. I mean, it's just like, straight up Mordor.
Yeah, and when I say if you saw Lord of the Rings, I'm going to get meaner. Did you read Lord of the Rings? It's identical to Mordor. It is.
It just is. I mean, he's effective. He also, to be fair, Korin looks like Sauron.
Yeah. This is a dead rip, and it's fine. It's, you're dead ripping the greatest sci-fi series in history. So
I mean, it's not even close.
I mean, it'd be more embarrassing if they ripped off like Battlefield Earth.
That's gonna hurt my soul. Fuck on that one. Oh, that movie was bad.
So was he.
I mean,
it's like, just like, the movie was bad. The human being was worse. So Korn's realm is a realm of fire and blood. So, which doesn't really mean anything. It just means it's a giant wasteland that has rivers that run through it that are apparently...
It's Mordor.
Yeah. Well, it's surrounded by... I do love this. It's surrounded by volcanoes that are always erupting, also known as Mount Doom.
And it's also got rivers of lava.
Yeah, rivers of lava and rivers of blood. I refer to it as magma because I
want... Liquid hot?
Magma, because I wanted to put some magma in here. The volcanoes are also, so the volcanoes rim the outer edge of this land. And they're not even like tapered, like the volcanoes we have in the earth. They're just pointy scrags that if you try to climb up, you'd fall down and die. So.
But also they'd erupt on you and you'd die.
Yeah. And they're also always erupting. So it's not really an overly enticing place.
Also, you'll get killed if you try to.
Yeah. Die. Well, and that's where it gets better. So Korn's, again, Korn is the god of battle. He's the god of conflict. So obviously his realm is built for conflict and battle. And you know what his realm doesn't have a lot of? Cover.
No.
It's just wide open plains that are...
He does have it. It's fortified. You have to make a...
Well, you get to the fortification, but that's all. You go from the volcanoes on the edge. If you get past the volcanoes, you've got flat plains of fire, magma, and blood with beasts of Korn running all around them. Fighting each other unless a common foe arrives, in which case...
I think that what you meant to say was an intoxicating aura.
Sure. They're just...
Yeah. Like, yeah. Good to hear, Brad.
Yeah, although I will laugh at this. I did point this out from playing 40K. You know who likes wide open battlefields a lot?
Well, the shooting armies.
The shooting armies, not the melee armies. It's like, if your entire thing is we like doing glorious combat... You should have cover.
Yeah, it's a bummer when the horrors shoot you.
Yeah, it's like
a lot.
Yeah, like I'll give Tau this piece of credit. If there's no cover, Tau are incredible.
Tau will win the engagement in Korn's realm.
Oh yeah, they do great. But in the center of it, there's a couple little bits. One is a lake of blood and fire, which is just a giant lake of demons riding demon dragons.
Yeah, but it's whoa, you're not doing this justice.
Let's do this, yeah. So,
one, it looks, if someone could do a panorama of this on a display board, it would be bonkersville. Everything empties into this giant lake of bubbling blood / magma.
It looks like lava, but it's actually blood.
Blood, yes. It's like liquid blood magma, liquid. Whatever.
Blood's a liquid.
Good but job, it's right? Also, yeah, well, it's a plasma.
It's whatever. Like liquid blood. Okay, following, I'm tracking.
But all I'm saying is things get reborn from here. Like you literally, you have all of these awesome creatures. All I'm saying is a bloodthirster jumping on top of a giant dragon coming out of a lake of
that then
magma blood.
Leaps into something else and kills them. And after they kill it, the thing falls in the lake of blood, is then resurrected by Korn, comes back out of lake of blood. And it's an endless battle. On top of this lake of blood of flying dragons and bloodthirsters.
This thing literally says, two in a row. Yeah. My literallys. But this thing also says, Valhalla, suck it. This is
This is
the real deal.
Have any space wolves been to Korn's lair?
Oh, they would never come back.
Oh, it would just be like, well, so we're staying,
right? This is so much better. Yeah,
we're staying, right, guys? Like, look, we have to get back to the Imperium. Prospero blows. This is amazing.
Yeah, this place rocks.
Yeah, this is my favorite place.
This is endless epic boss combats.
Yeah, so I just jumped off of a dragon to kill another dragon, then jumped to another dragon to hit. Like, I literally
you forgot. Like, a bloodthirster was riding the dragon.
I'm never going home. Yeah. This is my. I live here now.
This place rules.
Yeah.
As far for combat, Khorne's realm, pretty primo.
Oh my god! But off of this, just off the center of the Lake of Blood is the Brass Citadel, which is where Khorne lives.
We have to go into the description of this because depending on what you read, it either has an infinite sea of skulls that you can never cross, or it has panoramic view that looks cool.
Of a skulls. Lot of skulls. It's got a lot of skulls, and in the I view it as a very large mound of skulls,
which then leads to the brass walls.
Yep, and which are a kilometer high brass wall that stands. It sticks up out of the sea of skulls.
And then what do you find inside there?
More skulls.
Because Khorne's sitting on top of them.
Because Khorne is sitting on a throne.
Of skulls.
Well, it's a throne of brass.
Brass, sorry.
On top of a endless pile
of skulls. Blood for the blood gods. Come on now, say the line.
Blood for the blood god.
Skull for the skull throne.
Because what happens is, as a follower of Khorne in the mortal realm, when I kill something, I can dedicate its death to Khorne, and when I do so, its skull will appear
in Khorne's lair.
In Khorne's lair,
which is why it's an infinite.
Yeah, it's always growing. I guess it's getting taller. I don't care how these physics work; it's not a real place. So
that's why the warp exists, because things can. The laws of physics do not apply to the Immaterium. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So, in the center of all this, though, is Khorne, and Khorne is actually one of the better described gods of chaos. Tzeentch, obviously, is the least.
Khorne's actually one of the more terrifying.
Khorne doesn't change form. That's why.
You know, because also there's the threat of Khorne just showing up in the material world if enough shit went down.
Yeah.
Like, he's already has a, this is my set form. I will, if enough things went in my way.
Yeah.
I'll just be there.
I'll just appear and then.
And then.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Feel free to bring whoever you want or whatever you want. So
Khorne is described as this impossibly large creature with overlapping plate mail made of brass and a face of pure rage. Also, as Sauron. I mean,
one of the bigger things about this is if you come into the presence of Khorne, you are immediately, no matter what, enveloped by his rage. So you now feel that way.
Yeah, all the gods have that. The gods, Nurgle's one's a little bit fun. We'll get there next episode, but it's a little bit fun. But all the gods, if you're in their presence, their most, you know, premier feature hits you like a ton of bricks. Yeah, you can't resist.
That's just what happens. Not even just the god itself, but when the gods in his realm.
Some of our listeners have been playing the game for a lot longer. You are correct. Khorne used to be a beast man. That's actually in the original. He was viewed as kind of having horns and a head. If you don't know what beast man is, now there's Age of Sigmar anymore. Too soon?
Oh, that's hurtful, man.
Too soon?
That's hurtful, bro.
Too soon.
Oh, that's not cool.
it was not cool. And invalidating a freaking army.
I mean, also true.
Yeah, that was just brutal.
Old Worlds.
Yeah, you can play Old Worlds, I guess. So, yeah, but he's had a few different, obviously.
He's effectively the Balrog.
Yeah, well, he's the Balrog. He's Sauron. It moves around depending on the edition you're playing.
True story.
Or even some of the games you're playing. Like, he's got different.
But in all of them, he's
old
still.
Old World, yeah.
Warhammer he's covered Fantasy. He's Conan-esque, covered in something.
You know what I realized we didn't mention, and we probably should? The gods of chaos overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Warhammer Fantasy, which is gone and now is back, and Age of Sigmar. It is the same models. It is the same gods. So I just realized we never covered that in the last episode. And I was like editing this in. So I'm doing it now. There you all go. So if you play, and a side note, like there's some of the Sigmar models are way better than some of the 40K models.
Some?
Jesus Christ. But if you do play it, just understand that it's the exact same Khorne. So a lot of times if you go to buy Chaos Demon kits, you'll order them and it'll show up and it'll say Age of Sigmar on it. That's still a 40K kit because it's the same world. If you play Old World, The bases are different, but
still a GW model though.
Yeah, but it's the same story. It's the same mm-hmm. god. The corn of Sigmar, the corn of fantasy, is the same as the corn of 40K, which makes that timeline really, really fun. So GW did it before Marvel did, guys.
True story.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
So next to Khorne does have a kind of, is a super sword, is what I would call it. It's a giant two-handed sword known as the Warbringer, the Woebringer, the End of All Things. Normally, I wouldn't give a crap about this, but apparently this sword is so powerful that he actually could cut a hole in the Immaterium to the Materium in the reality.
That's my thing he's the most terrifying end time boss.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that he already has the ability to fracture reality.
Yes. The question is, does he know it?
That one, I don't.
Yeah, that becomes
don't know.
That becomes one of the questions. So, followers of Khorn, I think we all kind of know world eaters.
Some are easy though, because of the fact that we already talked about. Let's just do these in order. First off, you have trade allegiance, world eaters. You're always going to have in a galaxy that is at war, carry the one 100% of the time.
Yeah,
you're going to get followers of the guy that can make you better at battle when all you do is fight battles, period.
It's pretty simple. So he's got his main retune outside of his demons are, of course, the world eaters who have given their souls over to him via Angron. But he also has warbands, and warbands are a little bit different. I want to draw this distinction early. If you've given your soul to Khorne and Khorne owns you, he imbues you with different powers. So Berserker. So berserkers are imbued with the power of Khorne.
And the thing is though, with warbands, you can have after the fracturing of the world eaters, after Khorne effectively fractured the world eaters, you have zerkers and new zerkers because people do put themselves body and soul to Khorne, and you get new berserkers.
But you also get just regular chaos space marines. Because this is what Ahriman was in. Yes. Ahriman was not with the World Eaters when they found him. He was with just a warband
of
Khorne. So they were they weren't imbued with Khorne there, but they were fans.
Well, they're followers. They were followers that were imbued by Khorne. Because again, if all you do is fight, which a lot of the time is what's going on in space, especially if you're a space marine on either side, loyalist or chaos, you're looking for an advantage, especially if you're living, in the Eye of Terror / the Rift.
It's not a great spot.
Yeah, you might have to fisticuffs occasionally.
Every now and then you might have to fight, just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
It's possible.
So I'm probably going to look for an advantage, and that's how you get warbands of Khorne. And the thing is weirdly enough, those make a lot of sense.
Yeah. They actually probably make the most sense of all of them.
Yeah. The people that make actually good sense, again, are cultists of Khorne.
Yeah,
most of these
I refer to them as the least subtle of all the cultists. Yeah. When there's like Khorne cultists.
Yeah, when you show up and you see jackals.
Yeah. It's like, what?
And the thing is these are just bands of people trying to murder somebody else. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm looking for a couple PDs to make it happen.
And I'll tell you what, Hive Cities and then Feudal Worlds, these guys do great there.
I don't even understand how the Hive Cities aren't 50% corn in the first place.
Because there's still some.
Or the Undercity.
Yeah, the Undercity is pure corn at this point.
Because it's just battle. It's a Royal Rumble every day, all day.
Yeah, and what happens is, as we said before, what Korn loves to do is he loves a champion. So if you're in the Undercity of a Hive, and you and your three buddies go start raiding and conquering land, Korn may just reach out to you. But at the same time, if you're, you know, you and your three buddies are looking to get a leg up, there also might be some weird priest around the corner who also will say, well, I can help make a deal with you, and I can help you get a hold of these, and we can grow. So cultists and corn. Yeah, there's a lot of them, guys.
Also,
corn, until the Inquisition shows up.
Also the fact that corn isn't super worried about whether or not you die in your attack. So if you go down in a glorious pile of gunshots into your face.
Well, and we're going to get to this with Tzeentch, but like Tzeentch has a plan. He's got deception.
Korn has zero plan.
So if the Inquisition captures devotees of Korn, what are they going to tell him?
That we were going to punch a guy in the head?
Yeah, it's blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne. What? Well, what's the grand scheme here? We're trying to unravel this great mystery.
I told you I was going to punch that guy in the head.
Yeah, I have a chainsword and I was going to hit that guy with a chainsword.
The guy with the chainsword that I'm standing across from, I was going to hit him with my chainsword.
Yeah, this seemed fun.
Like, I don't understand where we're going here.
The next one I'm going to dive into is kind of the key demons of Korn. So all the gods of chaos, Korn has specific demons that he manifests.
And his demons are the coolest.
They do look the best. Yeah, they do. I was thinking through. So we'll start with the ones that you see the most. Bloodletters.
This is the battle line version of them.
Yeah,
this is also the most plentiful. This is what you get when you have a battle that includes the forces of Korn. 100%, you're going to get bloodletters. In the 40K game today, you won't see bloodletters, but in the lore, you will always see
until 10th edition. They just made them pointless. But bipedal creature, all red, big teeth, giant brass horns.
Swords.
Carrying a makeshift sword.
Swords and or an axe. They used to have both.
Yeah. Now it's all just a pointy thing.
And the thing is that this is the soldier. This is the footline soldier. And they haven't literally.
There we go.
Infinite amount. And I'm using it correctly on this one.
Yeah. There's a nonstop amount of energy that Korn can pull from to make more and more blood letters. But there is a level up from a bloodletter, and that's called a blood crusher.
These are my favorites.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you know what? I didn't talk about juggernauts. Let's just do juggernauts real quick. So a juggernaut is a demon bull.
That has flames coming from its nostrils.
Yeah. It is so cool.
It's also made of metal.
Yeah. For some reason, it's made of brass. Yeah. It's a demon engine, and a bloodletter will ride it. And that's called a blood crusher.
Yeah. And that's why it's freaking awesome.
They're so cool. Aesthetically amazing.
It looks awesome.
Rules.
Its rules have been okay for a long time.
Yeah.
They've always been okay. I also own the metal ones, which if I got mad at my opponent, I could throw it at him. And I'm pretty sure
it would leave a bruise.
It would be a crime. Those are heavy.
Yeah. It would definitely leave a bruise. From there, we move into the greater demons. And it's really just one, because everyone just has one greater demon. It's a bloodthirster.
I mean, there's some serious mojo with that because we've had some great, great named bloodthirsters.
We have.
Big K that fought Sanguinus multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
But you've had some great stories because the bloodthirsters are rage incarnate.
Yes.
They are the direct will of Korn. These are rage and his lair made manifest. It's a giant
demon with wings that carries a whip and an axe or a sword.
Depends. You know, the thing is,
I would model it. Never a gun.
Yeah. These are, exactly. And the thing is that these are just, they can make the entire battle different for both sides. We'll talk about Scarbrand.
Yep.
Scarbrand's aura is so big that he used to affect everyone on the table. So he's amazing. Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah. So the purpose of a greater demon is to lead the forces for Korn in the Materium. Because as Brad said, Korn, in theory, could make it into the Materium, but he'd have to manifest himself with all of his power. So instead of doing that, what the gods of chaos do is they manifest their greater demons into there. And when you manifest a bloodthirster, it is not a great day for a lot of people.
No.
Because this is, it is not only rage incarnate, it is battle incarnate. They are incredible in their strength, their speed, their everything. They can slay entire legions if they need to. And we'll even talk about one now. So a good example is Kabanda. So for those who were there for a Horus Heresy, Kabanda, or Bandha, one of them, was the demon who exposed the Red Thirst and the Blood Angels and almost killed Sanguinius.
He did do the look at Elvis before he did it.
Yeah, he did. I mean, later, the second meeting didn't go great for Kabanda.
Yeah. Didn't go.
Yeah.
Didn't go well. I mean, sometimes you break your back, sometimes you don't.
Yeah, Sanguinius definitely took out round two. But Kabanda, it's a good story to kind of talk about how powerful Kabanda is, because he took out almost an entire Blood Angel Legion and their Primarch single-handedly.
Sorry, Blood Angels, but he also single-handedly turned the tide in the devastation of Baal.
Yeah, it's actually one of my favorite stories about him is, and we haven't covered this yet, but when the Tyranids come into the galaxy, they hit Baal, which is the home planet for the Blood Angels. And the Tyranids are not having a tough battle here, if I'm being perfectly honest.
They're getting Rickrolled.
Yeah, the Tyranids just running through the Blood Angels. Kabanda sees this, and he had claimed that he would be the one to end the Blood Angels.
It's such a crazy story.
So he
shows up to start killing Tyranids because he said, no one gets to kill Blood Angels but me. But me.
So he and a few million bloodletters fight off the Tyranid invasion.
To which is, this is another thing that we have to talk about.
He destroyed Hivefeet Leviathan himself.
This is the big deal of Korn, though, because this is a battle that wasn't dedicated to Korn either way.
Nope.
But battle was happening.
Yep.
How much battle? Enough battle that it made a demonic incursion possible because of all the fighting, all the bloodlet, all the, you know, the war that was going on.
And then that demonic incursion created so much more bloodlet that it actually fed itself. I mean, this was, we haven't touched on them yet, I understand, but those who know Tyranids, this was Hivefeet Leviathan.
Which was the Hivefeet.
Which is the biggest Hivefeet, got just wreck-rolled by Kabanda and a bunch of bloodletters, saving the Blood Angels so that he could go kill them later.
To give the Overmind credit, I did not see a million demons showing up.
Yeah, this was not planned. Another one that I would say, if I ranked all the Korn demons and like my favorites, Scarbrand's my favorite. And I just love the story of Scarbrand.
We're talking about origins of Scarbrand.
Yeah.
Tzeentch whispered into the ear of Scarbrand that Scarbrand was powerful enough to take on Korn.
Yeah.
So Scarbrand, who was a bloodthirster, winged bloodthirster, I guess they all are, except for him now, came up and swung his mighty axe and hit Korn in the foot and left a tiny mark. And Korn was ain't trying to hear that, see?
Yeah.
And picked Scarbrand up and threw him for 8 days.
8 days through the Immaterium.
Which ripped off his wigs because he was Mach 9 through the warp. And then Scarbrand was unbelievably pissed that this happened and has been trying to show everybody how awesome he is ever since. Not even the showing people is awesome. He's just been so angry about it.
He's just angry and shows up and he's effectively rampaging across the galaxy.
He's a maniac.
Like Looney Tunes Tasmanian Devil style.
And the thing is,
he just shows up places.
I know what Scarbrand's rules are now, but Scarbrand's rules,
they're terrible now.
Yes, but Scarbrand's rules used to be he gave extra attacks to both anybody.
Anyone in his presence.
In his presence. Didn't matter. Friends, foes.
He also would attack friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anybody that was around him got caught up in his rage, which is awesome of a story.
Oh, it was incredible.
Because Scarbrand is effectively mentally broken. Yeah.
Presence created rage inside of you.
You could not stop it.
Yeah.
It was just you got caught up in the whirlwind of his rage. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, Scarbrand's awesome. Model's really good too. So
Dan always has been.
Korn's got good models. Korn has really, really good models. I think of the demons. You can do amazing things with keepers and with what's the two-headed bird?
Lord of Change.
Lord of Change. They well painted. Those are incredible. But those lines in general, I'm like, meh. The Korn line is perfect the whole way through.
It's 100%. It's so good.
But let's talk about Korn and the Imperium, because at its core, that's kind of what matters right now to us from a lore
cast. The thing is that, sorry, Imperium lovers, the Imperium is keeping Korn going. War is the business, and business is good.
Well, and this, we talked about this before on the last cast a little bit. One of the things about Korn is, if you're the Imperium, and we'll do the Ragdan invasion, right? Which I know is before Horus Heresy, but it's a good example. You've got this massive war, or actually, hell, the Leviathan coming in. Anywhere, not town.
God damn it.
Anywhere that the Imperium is fighting, Korn is going to see it. And you're right, maybe he's not able to infuse Grey Knights with his power. But
he's
a Catachan jungle fighter. I mean, anyone knows what Catachans are.
Even if they don't need, even if they don't know it.
He's
unless
there.
You're actually trained to fight against warp influence, you will not even know that you're getting a boost to your power. And I'm sorry, if I'm a Catachan jungle fighter and I'm fighting off whatever.
Yeah, a Tyranid warrior who's twice my size
and
has twice the arms.
And I get a little lucky. I seem to be a little faster. I seem to dodge just a little bit better. I'm not worrying about where the hell that came from.
And Korn's not reaching out to him saying, hey, I took care of you.
No.
I need you to cut a toe off for me. Like, Korn's just like, cool. Can you go do that again?
Thanks for fighting.
There's more Tyranids over there. What do you say? Yep. Chain sword's still working?
And the thing is again, you don't have to go out and say, I worship Korn. You just have to fight.
Yeah. And so this creates kind of a challenge, obviously, for the Imperium and the Inquisition. Because the Inquisition obviously needs to stamp out all influence of chaos.
That's impossible, though.
So what do you do?
Can't.
Well, it's more funny. What do you do when you have a frontline force that's winning? And it's like, well, do we want to go? We'll pretend it's guardsmen, not space marines, because they're the more expendable. But if we've got a front line of guardsmen who's just really wrecking shop on some Necrons.
Do we nuke them?
Yeah, do we nuke them because we realize that Korn is favoring them? They're not worshiping Korn, but he's favoring them. This is why Korn, in some ways, is the most insidious part of the Imperium's challenges.
Because you can't do, because they're forever, the Imperium is forever at battle from legitimately everywhere.
Yeah.
So
Korn is effectively being fed from everywhere. And it's really hard. I mean, Sisters of Battle. I mean, I would argue some of the Saints.
They're juiced up by him.
Yeah. You tell me, we'll do this on those
acts of faith, you know?
Yeah. I'm not going to throw Saint Celestine under the bridge here, but
who's powering those? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everybody was going to yell, it's the Emperor, but also all that power is coming from the warp.
Is it the Emperor though? I mean, it's because again, he's not talking. That's all I'm saying. he's not out there saying, yeah, that was me, guys.
He's not a real socialite.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying. It's entire. The difference between the Emperor powering up a saint of the Sororitas and Korn doing it's going to look really similar.
Yep. And the thing is that Korn's, which is why he keeps usually waxing, not a lot of waning.
Yep.
Because the galaxy is at war. When you're the god of war and the galaxy's at war,
then
business is good.
It's a good gig. I hope that's enough coverage for Korn for all of you guys. And that gives you a good grasp of where Korn is. We'll now move on to the next part of this, which is in some ways the opposite, but there's actually a lot of similarities here.
I think there's a lot of synergy that goes on with Zeench and Korn. Yeah. So this is one of the reasons why the brothers, they are, which they are.
Mm-hmm.
Zeench and Korn go together so much. While all the ruinous powers are always fighting, Zeench guides people into battle.
Yeah.
Which always fuels Korn. So while none of the gods are going kumbaya and skipping through the forest together, Korn and Zeench get along as much as powers.
As much as they could. That's the best way to explain it. I think, yeah, exactly. Because Tzeentch creates scenarios for Korn to benefit.
He literally creates discord. He creates the seeds of conflict are put into play by Tzeentch in most of the places fighting's going on. Tzeentch is crazy insidious. Tzeentch is consistently making people fight. Tzeentch makes his own people fight quite a bit.
Well, so the thing about Tzeentch, one of the things I was reading about it, which I like the way they broke it down, where Tzeentch is engaging in plots that last millennia. But not just a single plot. He's also engaging in millions of plots that all last millennia.
Layer upon layer.
To the point where it's actually impossible to tell not just what Tzeentch's final goal is, but if Tzeentch even has a final goal.
And he's such a trickster about things because he's into deceiving, misinformation, making you find stuff, but also he does it to his own followers where he has them on a series of quests just to screw with them.
Yeah.
And then just like, why? That guy could have been your greatest champ. And you're like, yeah, it was kind of funny.
It's kind of funny. Let's see what happens.
Just like I just screwed him over at the end. So why not?
I mean, Tzeentch. It's interesting because the differences between Tzeentch and the Laughing and Sigarak are not massive.
Not massive.
Yeah, it really is. The Elder Gods.
The Laughing God. I'm sorry, Elder Guys, but the Laughing God and Tzeentch are pretty close.
They would be. I wouldn't be surprised if they have a shared origin.
Because Tzeentch is supposed to be a very serious god of knowledge, deception, forbidden knowledge. He sends people on clown quests. A lot.
Yeah, I mean, and it depends on what you're reading with that. Because you're right. There was a period of time where I think Tzeentch was pretty heavily in that. It's all forbidden knowledge, the dark arts. That's what Tzeentch was. And then over time, it's been this like almost trickster of like,
he constantly sends you on Nonsenseville because he tests you. And the worst part about it is as much of the time as he gives boons, sometimes he gives you nothing.
Yeah.
I achieved 22 quests in a row. What was my final reward? This is an empty box. Deuces. Yeah. Also, there's a 400 space marines outside that are going to kill you now. You're like, but I did everything you asked. Yeah, I know. You shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, it was stupid.
That was dumb.
I'm the god of deception. Why are you making deals with me?
You should have been smarter about that. See you later.
What makes Tzeentch really tricky, though, is Tzeentch is the only one who can actually both affect space and time. So sometimes he'll have a plot that will actually conclude before it began.
Also, the fact that Tzeentch sees forward and backward in time, but he also changes it when he looks at it. We also talk about every time you look at the future, you change the future, which is what Tzeentch is constantly doing. So he has 500,000 plots to achieve the same goal, possibly.
And that's the whole thing about Tzeentch. No one can figure out what he's even trying to do. Yeah, it's just sometimes it just looks like deception for the sake of deception. So let's dive into kind of the birth of Tzeentch. We don't know the only god whose birth is recorded is Slaanesh, obviously, but GW has told us Tzeentch was the second to come into being, which I still think it should have been Nurgle, but whatever.
But the big thing is we know how once civilization came into being. We cannot say that this was already Eldar, but whatever. When human civilization came into being, that's when you got people thirsting for knowledge, thirsting for power that came through knowledge, scheming.
Feels like plague would have happened first, but whatever. Yeah. But anyway, Tzeentch is actually in the early stages the most powerful of the Chaos Gods because Tzeentch is warp energy.
Well, at the beginning, he was the flashiest.
Yeah. Well, but he actually was. He was the most powerful.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He was the first one because he's a god of knowledge. All these gods are awakening in the warp. Tzeentch was the first one to figure out how to use the warp. So he actually was this massively powerful god.
It's also nice when your followers can again throw lightning bolts out of their butt. Yeah. You're going to get a lot of followers when you say the Korn guy goes, "I'm a powerful warrior. I can show this to you." And the Tzeentch follower goes, I will just shoot lightning bolts at you.
I'll just make you disintegrate.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty easy for me to show you the power of my god.
I play a lot of D&D. It's a beholder. Like, oh, look, disintegration,
and,
right.
And you're done.
Hey, failed that test. Your character doesn't exist anymore.
You should have better saves.
Yeah. What's funny about this story, and I'm foreshadowing something I'm going to cover later, is the other gods, at this point, I believe it was just Nurgle and Khorne, had enough of Tzeentch and then actually came together to kill him. And they took Tzeentch and they threw him against a mountain, and he just shattered into billions, millions of shards all around the galaxy.
But did he want to be shattered?
Of course he did.
Because he kind of came back more powerful.
Yeah. And don't worry. Like, that story sounds like, hey, is there more to that story? Yeah, I'll get there in like 15 minutes. Like, it's just trust me, but I just want to get that. So as it currently stands, though, Tzeentch is actually the fourth most prevalent chaos god, and he might be one of the least powerful. However, despite him being the least prevalent in the 40K universe, he is, according to the Inquisition, the most feared.
Oh, 100%.
And we'll get to there in a minute, too, but like, Tzeentch's powers are horrifying. Luckily, no one really can use them. So let's go into what those powers are. He's the god of forbidden knowledge, deception, and magic. I don't know, which is, I just think, a trope. But anyway, he's really just the god of all knowledge, and he has endless knowledge. And I, my opinion, I think he just gets bored sometimes.
Well, he's playing games with the games.
Yeah, he just like to see, like, we'll use Ahriman, the Rubric of Ahriman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, true.
So Ahriman is trying to cast a spell to release all of his brothers.
Rubric of Ahriman. It's also the rubric again. Rubric of damnation.
Yes, true. Yeah, those are the same thing. Oopsies. What does Tzeentch do? He allows him to proceed. He actually helps him be successful in his testing. This test is working great. No problem. Go ahead and cast your spell, Ahriman. What's going to happen? Oh, that's what's going
to
happen.
You're like, those were your guys. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. You damned all of them to damnation. Why?
It was hilarious when he thought everything was working out.
Did you see Ahriman's face? He basically is punked.
Yeah. And he does that a lot.
There are arguments that actually the ability to use warp powers may be a Tzeentch thing. It may be that everything in the galaxy that can use the warp is a gift from Tzeentch. That was that's fan fiction?
That's a fan theory.
But I like it. I like the idea that Tzeentch is so old.
Well, it's also
so ancient.
They said that that's one of the reasons that the old ones could only do certain things, because they didn't want. They knew that all of the ruinous powers could be what they are, and they were trying to not let that happen.
Eldar did not.
No, Eldar did not listen.
They did not. As a result, though, every single spell that's cast in the entire galaxy, Tzeentch is aware of. Every time someone reaches into the warp and does something,
it's not even that he's aware of. He knows the spell.
Yeah. Well, he knows the spell, but one thing is he feels it. So any psyker anywhere in the galaxy doing anything psychic, Tzeentch is instantly aware of it.
It's not even just like I said, it is important to specify.
In fact, he's aware of it before it happens.
Yeah. He knows the spell, though. And that's a big thing.
Yeah. That's true.
Because he knows every spell.
Not every spell.
Well,
we're getting there, because I really do love that those two little fuckers. I thought that word. So Tzeentch's knowledge, though, just to kind of put on a scale, the Black Library that the Eldar have held,
it's the repository of all the most knowledge in the galaxy.
That is effectively a child's bookshelf compared to what Tzeentch knows. There is anything and everything that has ever happened or potentially will happen, Tzeentch is aware of.
Or has a hand in.
Yeah. The colors and numbers. Tzeentch is 9. As we said on Khorne, these don't matter.
They totally matter.
They're useless. It never comes up. It only comes up because every now and then you have to cast a spell, and 9's a pain in the ass to roll in 2 dice, so it's not even a good one.
Tzeentch is the models. I'm going to throw this out there. Cool models. Don't get me wrong at all. But just like we said, last episode when we were talking about Terminator armor versus what it is in reality.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things is Tzeentch's minions change form. They don't respect reality of laws of physics. looking at horrors makes regular men lose their sanity.
Yep.
It is so hard to put that on the table. How do I model something?
Yeah, that's true. I think with the exception of the Lord of Changes, Zinch's models.
It's just hard because they're supposed to be changing and not respect. It's the same thing when you're talking about Cthulhu. Like they don't respect the laws of physics.
Yeah, they're supposed that's a good point. They're shifting in and out of, because we'll get to Zinch in a second, does the same way. Like, you're right. The tabletop doesn't do the lore credit.
But how? You know,
but
how?
Because you couldn't. Right. The,
you're like, sorry, but we had to make three things in three dimensions. So yeah. I didn't have five or six other dimensions to model this in. So my bad.
So we're just gonna do it in the one you can all, and but use only visible light.
Yeah. but it is a thing on that, because that is one of my favorite things about Zinch and Zinch's demons is they win fights a lot of times, not because they're the most powerful. Zinch physically demons are a lot of times very weak comparatively, but when you break the minds of everyone you fight against before any shots are fired or any swords are swung, well, I'm probably going to win that one because the guy's in the corner shitting his pants because he can't figure out why reality doesn't work. I'm probably going to win that fight.
It's fair.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
One cool thing about Zinch is where, like, Khorne has this great land. It's structured. We have volcanoes. We've got rivers of blood. We've got all this stuff, the Skull Throne. Zinch's land is just confusing. That's the way they describe it.
Well, it's ever changing.
It's ever changing. There are the people who've been there describe it as everything has no edges. It's all like it's a dream. Trying to move through it, you know, one step could feel like impossible because somehow you forgot how to walk. That's his entire
distances realm. Don't exist.
It's his entire realm. Most people who visit it, you know, they come back and they're just crazy and they all end up committing suicide, or the Inquisition helps them with that process.
Yeah. Inquisition's like, oh, we'll just help you along.
Yeah. Because mostly because the one challenge is if you've been to Zinch's realm and come back to the Materium, you probably know some stuff the Inquisition doesn't want you to know.
One of the big things is Zinch is often truthful on the fact of, I will let you know the thing that you want to know. Mm-hmm. However, your mortal brain can't comprehend the actual thing you want to know. So he goes, no problem, I'll show you it. And then you go, oh, my brain broke. Sorry.
I'm now completely crazy.
And that happens so much in the stories.
Yeah.
Zinch breaks the minds of more people than he ever kills.
Well, because he's giving so much. What he does is he just dumps so much information and so much that you just can't comprehend it all. And so you're just driven mad.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, most of the stories of Zinch, people that are trying to either defeat Zinch, following Zinch, his greatest champions, a lot of times he never smites them, kills them, defeats them. He lets them have what they want. And that thing that they want is often the thing that breaks their mind.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tons of the stories.
You're right. It's kind of cool because the next bit I was going to go into here is the center of Zinch's realm is his great labyrinth. Because Zinch, like, has no defenders. If you were to walk into the realm of Zinch, you could walk all the way to the labyrinth. I mean, you might not. You'll probably go crazy in the process. But it's designed to just be this, look, if you want to get here, you can try.
Also, tons of people that have went through the labyrinth, again, win in huge air quotes.
Well, no one's ever gotten through the labyrinth. That's the thing.
Is plenty of people have thought.
Yep, there we go.
They've gotten through the labyrinth, though.
Yeah. Is this impossible? And we say labyrinth. When we talk about lore in general, I'm talking like mythology, all those things. Labyrinth is always used as this like trope of it's an impossible maze no one can ever get through, except for one hero who pulls it off. Not in this case. No one gets through.
Also, Zinch's labyrinth isn't just the Minotaur walking through walled things. Zinch will put you through everything. He'll make you replay every shitty event in your life and drive you mad.
And the labyrinth also is moving. It's adjusting. Any success you have within Zinch's labyrinth is because Zinch wanted you to do it. He's just waiting for the time that giving you failure is going to be the most painful, and that's when he's going to do it.
True story.
Zinch is kind of a dick.
Yeah, I was saying, Zinch is terrible.
Yeah. So, followers of Zinch, equally important, they're kind of complicated because they're the most, they're the fewest.
Yeah,
and they're also the most powerful.
But they're also the most at the same time. And what I'm going to say is Zinch Kaiser Soze's more people because a ton of people think they're doing stuff for something, somebody else, including the Imperium, mm-hmm. and or one of the other ruinous powers. But they're not. They're
doing Scarbrand. Yeah.
They're doing something because Zinch whispered into the ear, and that person whispered into the ear, and this person whispered into the ear, and some followers of Slaanesh are doing the thing that Slaanesh told us to do. And you're like, I mean, are you?
Yeah.
But that's how Zinch works, though.
And this is why the other gods hate Zinch.
Because it's
makes their followers do his bidding.
Yep. A lot also.
Yeah. One area that makes Zinch really dangerous, though, is psykers. The thing about being a psyker, and we don't really talk about this enough, and we probably should do some casts on it, is the act of using your psychic powers is training. It's experience. You have to learn to do all these things. And we're talking, we talk about Eldar, right? Eldar were at their prime, were able to just use psychic powers to create anything from anywhere. But they always could. It's 60 million years of that.
It's also part of their innate DNA.
But mankind
is
new to this.
Also, using psychic powers, especially for humans as a whole, takes a even done right, taxes you, takes a tremendous, because you're like, hey, what's tired? My soul.
Exactly.
How do you rest the soul up? I don't really know how to stretch out before I didn't want to pull a hammy on my soul. It's really hard to figure that out, especially if you don't have training, which a lot of Zinch cultists do not have anything. Zinch just says, you got powers, you should do stuff. And he's like, what can I do? Anything you want. And then if you don't pause and go, is that going to have an adverse effect on me? You're like, oh yeah, you're going to die for sure.
Well, what makes Zinch so nasty is that Zinch can go to a psyker and say to them, hey, you made a lightning bolt or you manifested some food or whatever it is. What if I show you how to really do it? So now we're talking, and we're going to cover this in a future cast, an unregulated psyker.
So dangerous.
Now has, it's not, because a psyker, it's a weird way to look at it. I look at it this way. Psykers aren't more or less powerful than other psykers. It's their ability to pull power from the warp and use it. Which to me is a knowledge thing.
One of the biggest things though, John, is for me is you can have these untrained psychers do things that other psychers can't do because of the fact that they don't know any better and the fact that they're going to die after casting that spell. You get people throwing down these just gigantic lightning storm, whatever it is. But the person gets snuffed out after that because they get killed by channeling that much and they get immediately murdered. And Zinch doesn't care. Leonor, I wanted you to cast that lightning storm that you just cast.
You mean nothing to me. But what this creates is incredibly powerful psykers. Because I mean, it's just more my theory on this. It's like you look at some of the best psykers, are the ones who can pull massive amounts of energy, but can kind of calm themselves as they use it. Why can't I think of the Ultramarine psyker?
Tygeris.
Great example.
Tiggy's
just a man.
But he was born just knowing how to do it.
Exactly.
Immediately.
But what Tiggy does is just like any other.
Is he a follower of Zinch? Maybe he doesn't know it.
There we go. But the thing, what Tiggy does is when he casts, he can cast incredible powers, but he's able to keep himself calm and his soul centered so that he can do it. That is something that Zinch can give you.
But he also did that immediately.
Yeah, he's a Zinch demon, but that's fine. Yeah,
I'm just saying he did it without training.
Yep. So you can imagine how enticing giving your soul or making a deal with Zinch is. And Zinch loves himself a deal.
But it's so easy for Zinch on this because his gifts are so, obviously, forbidden knowledge, and he leads those people on. But we're talking about the psychers part of it.
Yeah.
when you're a psyker, it is so easy for Tzeentch to take a hold of you because his powers are so obviously you couldn't destroy things with lightning bolts from your fingertips, and now you can. That seems good. I'm going to keep worshiping this guy.
I'm going to kind of let's hang out with this guy. He seems to be good for me.
Yeah, I was a lot less cool before the lightning bolts out of the fingers.
Yeah. The other thing that makes Tzeentch dangerous, though, is he also has knowledge. And when we use the term forbidden knowledge, you can take it different ways. I don't take it as like, ooh, the dark arts. I mean it as secrets.
Oh, he
knows everyone's secrets.
Again, politicians.
Bingo.
The people in control are Tzeentch. This is why Tzeentch doesn't need the most followers. You're like, hey, you've got all these random, the unwashed masses. You're like, masses, who are your followers? Oh, the president and this dictator over here and this guy over here and the entire parliament is mine. You're like, oh, how? Because I let them have all of the knowledge of their competitors, all of the knowledge of the other powers, the other nations that were trying to compete against me. Oh, here's everything that they know. Now you know it.
Yep.
And it's so powerful.
It's incredibly powerful. And so what you get is politicians rise up from nowhere because they know, you know, so-and-so is skimming from the Imperium. So now he can report it. And then, yeah, so-and-so is extremely dead now. And you reported it. So now you move up a tier. It's all these little things, these little changes. And this also will even infest the military because you want to be a greater general. Tzeentch can help you know your opponent's movements so that you become a more successful warrior. This is what Tzeentch does. And
he can tell you of impending engagements too. So you can stop those before they even happen.
And it's all yours. That being said, Khorne is happy to just give his boons to anyone who wants a boon.
Well, that's the biggest thing.
Tzeentch.
Khorne gives no shits about who the victor is. Tzeentch does.
Yeah, Tzeentch, if he's going to give you something, there is a return. I mean, the flesh curse.
Yeah, Tzeentch wants his pound of flesh after he's done. Yeah. They aren't great return. You can worship Khorne accidentally and not really get a whole lot of terrible things that happen to you. If you worship Tzeentch, he's getting something.
You cannot worship Tzeentch without giving something up.
Yeah, you should read the fine print's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also written.
You should definitely get Daniel Webster to look over your stuff. Also, if you don't know what that is, read it down.
You're old.
I know, but it's good.
Yeah, it's still good. So we should also, just like with Khorne, I want to spend time on some of the demons of Tzeentch. So starting off, obviously, with the lesser demons, which he actually has three. They're all horrors. And I get a kick out of horrors because
they split.
Because it's cool. From the gameplay standpoint, the first one is a pink horror. Pink horrors are just about a space marine size. They have three arms, which is random.
It's because...
And they're pink.
Well, they model that 3M. They're ever-changing, and they look crazy.
Yeah, and they run at you. If you kill a pink horror, though, it explodes into two
blues.
Blue horrors, which are smaller versions of them, which then keep running at you and trying to hit you. Then, if you kill the blues, you get my favorites.
Brimstones!
Which are brimstones, which are little... So the way to look at it from... If I can give you guys a visual here, a pink horror is a large bipedal thing with, in the models, they have three arms.
Yeah.
They actually can cast psychic powers, but they're about that. Blues are about half the size of a pink, but they kind of look similar to a pink. They're just blue.
And brims are just cute little marshmallow guys. Yeah,
these little marshmallows of fire. And what they do is they're made of fire. What they love to do is light their opponents on fire with warp fire. Then they join hands around the opponent and sing while the opponent burns to death. This is something brimstones just do.
Yeah, they're cute and they're lovable.
Yeah, they're adorable. And they just want to burn their enemies to the ground. I don't know.
Heralds. Heralds can be several different things. They have the most common is the herald that leads other horrors. It's basically a juiced up
people. Yeah, it's a big horror.
But then you've also got Tzeentch has probably the most herald, I guess, esque models. because there's a lot of named demons that have done a lot of different knowledge for Tzeentch. So they can appear as riding things. Mm-hmm. They can appear as regular walking horse. There's just, as the Lord of Change, they can appear as a lot of wildly different horde or wildly different forms.
Yeah, heralds are kind of the, on the battlefield, the heralds are actually much more the leaders. So we're going to get to Lords of Change in a second, but Lords of Change aren't really meant for combat.
I didn't mean the Lord of Change, the demon, just the Tzeentch as the Lord, the prince. Well,
I'm thinking the greater demons. The greater demons, whereas like when you look at the other greater demons, so bloodthirsters, keepers, and great unclean ones, they are there to lead the armies. Whereas in Tzeentch, and we'll get there, I'm jumping ahead, but we'll come back to it. They're not, they're there to actually do the workings of Tzeentch. The heralds of Tzeentch are the ones who are actually leading the army.
Yeah. Because the Lords of Change are actually fighting and actually changing things with powerful sight.
Exactly. One other group that I didn't, I'm going to wedge them in here because I'm not really sure. We've never talked about Zangors before.
It's the planets of Tzeentch, though. This is what happens when you take an entire planet. It's a weird one
because Zangors aren't technically demons, though. They are.
No, they are Tzeentch-infused whatevers.
Yeah, beastmen is what they'll describe that. But so anyone who plays the game, you've seen Zangors. Actually, you might not because the rules have been garbage. But anyone who owns Thousand Suns owns
Zangor and Lightning are pretty good.
Yeah, but anyone who owns them is like owns them begrudgingly. So there's no real origin on a Zangor. So Zangors, they're basically a beast man, but they have a bird face and horns. That's the best way to explain it. But otherwise, they're just...
And they have a bunch of different... They have the actual psykers and casters. Mm-hmm. They have several versions of them. Mm-hmm. They are planets devoted to Tzeentch.
Yeah, they'll be entire planets of Zangors.
Yep.
And they live there. But they are actually created because the original thought was that they came from the planet of sorcerers, which doesn't make sense because
they were there before the planet of sorcerers.
Well, there was no planet of sorcerers before there was planet of sorcerers. That's the thing. So it's like they predate, they're supposed to be on the planet of sorcerers, which is what all of the Thousand Suns appeared
on. There was
on.
More of them before. I don't, they goof themselves
it's
up. Tzeentch
before is the problem. So effectively, we don't know where they come from, but we do know that they will randomly appear. So on like a ship that gets lost in the warp, the crew will get converted into Zangors. Yep. So we know Tzeentch makes them. Are they demons? No, because they move in the Materium with comfort. They don't need to be summoned into the Materium. So that's why they're not demons.
But they have casters. They have psychic affinity.
They do. But what I'm saying is like they fall in a weird category because like
they're demon prince-esque.
Almost. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Demon prince-esque.
Like they're how about they're warp touched is what I would say.
So, but from there we move into the greater demon, which is the Lord of Change. So the Lord of Change is really cool because, as we said, Tzeentch,
he also doesn't
has no form.
I know, but like the greater demons on the board function very well to the lore. Obviously, the Bloodthirster doesn't just kill everyone.
Yeah,
but he is a devastating force.
Same with the Great Unclean One. Just
the Lord of Change floor versus tabletop is difficult because yes, he's powerful. He's pretty decent in combat, has some pretty great psychic abilities, but man, in the lore, these guys are just bending reality to their will.
Well,
changing things.
The problem is that in the lore, they're not meant for combat. Lords of Change exist in the lore to influence and corrupt. That's what they do. They are the ones who are interacting with, you know,
mortals.
Yeah, with mortals. That's what they do. When you're making a deal with Tzeentch, you're making a deal with a Lord of Change.
They're legitimately the devils, and they psychically project themselves a lot. They don't always even show up.
Yeah, so there's like, them being on the tabletop doesn't really make a ton of sense because, as we said before,
the fight happening makes a lot of sense because they probably caused it.
Yeah, they probably caused it, but they're not. It's not their world. They would actually more likely leave. And let the followers of Tzeentch fight
because they're frail, is what they are for greater demons.
A greater demon. Oh, they're by far the weakest in combat.
Yeah,
in psychic, ooh boys.
Yeah, they'll melt your face. It's just that's what I'm saying. It's hard to give them, you know, Lord. All of them are going to be. We've already said that.
Right,
Lord to tabletop is always going to be tough.
Like one thing I like is, and there's a few different stories of Inquisitors who are driven mad because it turns out what the person that they're hunting down is a Lord of Change.
Oh, they didn't know.
And they finally get to the Lord of Change. The Lord of Change just basically melts their brain with information.
A lot of times they again give them what they want,
yeah,
which is too much for their mind to handle.
All of the corruption.
This is Lovecraftian stuff all over. They do it all the time. You shouldn't have made that deal with Cthulhu.
Yeah. But that being said, if a Lord of Change fought a bloodthirster, the bloodthirster's probably just...
Oh, he would stuff him into a can.
Yeah, and just, all right, now I'm going to get a soda, I guess. That wasn't...
I thought, who's the guy I'm supposed to fight?
Yeah, this thing? All right. Can I fight three? I'm not really that interested. So, as we talked before, when you go into the stories of any of the demons, you get a lot of named characters. And so I just picked the two that I enjoy the most. And
I mean, let's go with the Changeling.
Because the Changeling,
he's awesome. Also got great rules.
So the Changeling is, it's just a herald of Tzeentch. And we talked about this in the last episode. This is a lesser demon that might be the most, one of the most powerful demons.
You're about
in the
to get galaxy. Your brake line cut in a second.
Yeah.
This guy is nutty though.
He's so cool.
He has manipulated wars. He has made big dog characters do some.
Oh yeah. We're going to talk about a couple of them in a second. Yeah. So the Changeling has no form. He can appear as anything. So, I would actually argue, is Sigurath a Changeling?
I mean, that's kind of weird actually, but possibly.
And just saying, Sigurath has no form. Sigurath likes to manipulate. But anyway, so one of my favorites is on Fenris, the Changeling. So when the Thousand Sons, as we talked about with under the Ironman one, were attacking Fenris, a Changeling appeared first as Scout Marine and then took his form of Samael to convince Azrael to attack Fenris. That was a Changeling doing that. He also took the form of Lord Solar at one point and convinced half of Lord Solar's own army to retreat.
And when you said half of the army, it wasn't like half of the platoon.
No, this was an army.
Yeah.
Yes, he appeared. Lord Solar appeared and told them all, we're good, go home. And they all went, well, it's Lord Solar. I guess I'll just go home now.
Yep.
My favorite one is, no idea why, he appeared as a Gretchen to a Big Mech. And
he just tuned up his gun and blew him up.
Which made the gun explode when he went to use it.
Just looking for no reason. He just went, screw you, and just took off.
Yeah, these are just some of the weird stories. He also, this one is actually fantastic, created a Nurgling whoopee cushion.
I'm so surprised he didn't get killed for this one.
So the Changeling snuck into the Skull Throne with a bunch of Nurglings, tied them together, and made it so when Khorne sat down, the Nurglings exploded, making a horrible sound and an even worse smell. Why did he make the Skull Throne stinky? No idea, but he did it.
Indeed.
And this is why my question was, is Sigurath actually a Changeling? Because this is just what he does over and over and over again. The Changeling does not exist for a specific purpose other than for chaos.
Yep.
But they don't have, they have a model. It's hard to find. They do have a model. Are the Blue Scribes.
Blue Scribes rock too.
These things are just cool as hell. So.
They're like the two guards.
Yeah. But we talked earlier where Tzeentch was thrown against a mountain and broke up into a million shards. Each shard of Tzeentch is actually a spell of Tzeentch, and they're spread throughout the galaxy. These are shards of a god. So Tzeentch would like his shards back.
Well, Tzeentch also already got, he is more than the sum of his parts.
Mm-hmm. But he still wants all his shards back.
True story.
The problem is that who do you send to collect a shard? Because once they get a couple of them, they're some of the most powerful beings in the galaxy. So he grabs two blue horrors and sends them out to go collect them all. By the way.
To document them all, actually.
Well, yeah, we collect them and document them. Ahriman, this is one of those things where if someone like Ahriman knew these shards existed...
Oh, he'd be scooping that stuff.
He could care less about the webway. I'm going here now. So he's got two blue horrors named Pterix and Zerxaptip. I cannot. That's all I'm doing, guys. It's the same name spelled backwards. P-T-A-R-I-X and then the other way around. So that's what it is. Tartarix can transcribe any spell that he sees, but he doesn't transcribe it into a language he can read or comprehend. Then Zyktarup can cast and read anything that Tartarix writes down, but also can't comprehend them. So these two little blue horrors are running around grabbing shards, writing them down, no idea what they're writing down, but they can read them if they're in trouble.
And they don't know what they're casting.
They have no idea what they're casting.
It just so might be anything.
These
it
stories are hilarious.
It could be a comet. It could be I created pancakes.
That's a great there. And there are some very comical stories about these two when they get cornered. They always run away. Obviously, they have a disc of Zeench that they ride, so they can actually jump in and out of the materium. They can get anywhere. But if cornered, Zyktarupt will then immediately just start reading spells. Not
randomly.
He'll just start randomly reading spells to see what happens. And yeah, it might be you've got them cornered, and as Brad said, a comet hits you and blows you up, or French toast.
Yep.
French toast is now there, and it just looks at it and he just keeps casting until it works. They're awesome. They have a cool model. They're useless on the tabletop. But
yeah.
Yeah, and also, by the way, they also hate each other, which is what's really funny. They're always caught arguing with each other.
And they're with each other 100% of the time.
Yeah. They are the bane of existence for the Imperium. They have split a planet in half before with one of these spells, just because they were cornered and didn't know what to do.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, these things happen. Last little bit we'll cover, though, is going to be Zeench and the Imperium, and discuss kind of what the Imperium's viewpoint on Zeench is. And simply put, as far as the Inquisition is concerned, Zeench is the greatest threat to the Imperium. So Zeench and the Imperium, the challenge for the Imperium is Zeench, though, as we said before, doesn't represent a lot of cults. Zeench is the most dangerous to the Imperium because of who he corrupts.
The leadership.
Yeah. Every noble throughout the Imperium may be working for Zeench. And as we said before, unlike Khorne, where you could work for Khorne and not know it, if you work for Zeench, you have made a deal with Zeench, which means Zeench is getting something.
Which also, you have made a shitty deal. Zero Always. People have made a great deal with Zeench. Mm-hmm. No one ever walks away going, I really pulled the wool over Zeench's eyes. I came away with that with the best deal ever.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is you never know what Zeench's goal is. Zeench may make a deal with someone to give them knowledge and ask them to do something that looks benign, but that benign act
changes two different systems.
Exactly. It's a nothing thing. It is, Zeench is so corrupt. And so the Inquisition is most obsessed with tracking down Zeench corruption because it can affect the Imperium. You know, like, to be fair, if a Khorne gets a hold of a system, it's just going to burn. You send in some soldiers, you kill the corruption.
Yeah, but Zeench gets a hold of a system, all of a sudden his plan is that he wants to stop the shipment of Khorne 43 systems over because he wants to have a battle go his way in 100 years. Yeah.
And you have no idea he's there, but every day he's getting his fingers deeper and deeper into it. It is terrifying for the Imperium because the other thing too is Zeench is so crafty. Once his plans have begun, you're not going to stop them. The other one though, that's actually a lot scarier are Psykers. And we're going to do an episode pretty soon, everybody, on Psykers and Black Fleets and what have you, but regulated Psykers are scary to the Imperium.
Unregulated Psykers that are worshippers of Zeench. Again, Zeench gives, hold on, carry the one, zero shits whether you live or die. So he is willing to give you powers that will for sure kill you. So what?
But kill you, you might explode like an atom bomb in the middle of a high city.
In the middle of a high city, you might wreck Imperium shit, which is what he wanted you for in the first place.
Yep.
He gives no craps that you made a deal with him to become the most powerful Psyker to take over the world. And then, that was never going to happen.
And actually, let's dive into this just briefly here. If you're an unregulated Psyker in the Imperium, you are living a life of fear. You know you're not supposed to have these powers. And everyone in the Imperium is aware of the black ships. So you know that if people find out you have these powers, they will take you somewhere and you don't know where. So the only way to stay alive, it's not going to be good. The only way to stay alive is to fight. And
you need power to fight.
Zinj will give you that power. And what ends up happening is Psykers and spoiler alert, guys, Psykers in the Imperium are not rare. There won't be one Psyker in a Hive City. There could be thousands.
Oh, there won't be. You mean possibly there is.
There are thousands. Just, and Zinj may connect all of them together. So now you don't have.
It could be a cabal.
Yeah, you have a cabal of Psykers. You don't have one or two Psykers. You've got thousands of them.
And also Psykers are powerful by themselves. Cabals of Psykers can do world-altering magic.
Yep. And so this is why Zinj is such a threat to the Imperium. But from there, I think we'll just conclude. Next week, we're going into Slaanesh and Nurgle. Ugh, that's going to be difficult.
We're going to do the 6 rooms. There's no chance we're doing that.
We're not doing anything close to that. I do not need this getting canceled. We're doing really well right now. Like, we're going to talk about all of the great baking championships that Slaanesh has going on.
So many baking championships.
Just incredible. Baking championships. It really is like basically the entire Bravo network. It's like, you know, Top Runway, you know, America's Next Top Model, Project Runway. Like, I don't watch these things, but they all exist. That's Slaanesh.
Making so many faces right now.
All right. With that, though, and again, sorry for my voice, everybody. I realize it just gave out part with this cast. This is what happens. We try to do multiple in a day. But with that, like and subscribe to our cast. Join our Discord. It really is going very well. We're coming up. It's a good time to join the Discord, by the way, because we're coming up on the end of some of our new written content. So if you have some ideas, really good time to let us know. Also, I keep forgetting we have a Patreon. Jesus Christ, we're like 11 episodes in, haven't said it one time.
We should probably mention that.
Should mention it's a Patreon. My bad. But with that, this is John Barsotti and Brad Chester. See you all next week.